But first, Susan Jacoby. She's the author of The Age of American Unreason. In the book, Jacoby argues that America is dumbing down rather than smartening up. She told Steve Paulson that the inspiration for her book came from an incident on September 11th, 2001.
On September 11th, I was working in the New York Public Library, and like every other New Yorker, I had to walk home that day because the subways weren't running. And like a lot of New Yorkers, I stopped at a bar for a drink. I needed one. And as I was having my drink, you know, there were these two suits in their 30s, briefcases, obviously guys with good jobs. And one of them said, "This feels like Pearl Harbor." And I thought, well, yeah, probably that must be. And the other one says, "Was Pearl Harbor?" And then the first guy says, "Pearl Harbor is when the Vietnamese bombed one of our harbors and started the Vietnam War." And I thought, ooh, I mean, a light bulb didn't flash over my head. I've got to write a book about unreason and stupidity in America. But like most writers, I filed it away for future use.
And you didn't just write this off as, wow, that is just shocking ignorance there. But you think that's actually fairly commonplace, that kind of thinking.
Well, thinking is not what I would call it. Maybe that level of ignorance isn't commonplace, but certainly what I did in my book is I picked up where the great historian Richard Hofstadter left off in 1963. And certainly our level of historical knowledge, our knowledge of science, our knowledge of history, including our own, has really fallen off in the last 30 years. I think that there are a lot of reasons for that. Perhaps this is an extreme example, but every survey of every form of knowledge shows that ignorance is common, including among educated people. Look, 2 years ago, National Geographic Roper took a poll of 18 to 25-year-olds, and they found out that the vast majority of them, including those who are college-educated, can't find Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, four countries of obvious, immense importance to American interests on a map. A map, by the way, that's marked with the names of countries.
The names of the countries were on the map and they still couldn't find those countries?
Yes, meaning that they weren't exactly sure of where in the world to look on a map for it. That's the whole point. That's just one example, but there are others. International surveys of 15-year-olds show that we're practically dead last in math in developed countries. We're only mediocre in science, 14 out of 25 countries. I won't even go on about the polls by the National Constitution Center that show that the vast majority of Americans asked to name one First Amendment right. The only one that half can name is freedom of religion. Vast majority of people can't name any others.
Hmm. So you're saying there is rampant ignorance out there in the United States. But are you saying this is rooted in anti-intellectualism, that there's actually hostility towards intellectual thinking?
And in something new. Look, anti-intellectualism has always been a part of American life. Richard Hofstadter described it, I think, correctly, the traditional forms of anti-intellectualism. Some of them are the flip side of some of our best impulses. For example, evangelical religion, which is based on a personal relationship between man and God, is also resistant to Orthodox church hierarchies. But it was also resistant to the secularizing, scientific, and modernizing trends that more liberal religions accepted. Same thing, America got farther more quickly in the democratization of education in the 19th century. This also meant inevitably a lowering of standards that prevailed in countries where only 10% of people were expected to learn to read and write. But I think what's different today from the traditional forms of anti-intellectualism is that they're also melded with anti-rationalism, that during the last 40 years, and particularly during the last 20, there's been a positive contempt for evidence. I think, and the biggest factor in this is something that wasn't such a big factor at all when Hofstadter was writing, which is the infotainment culture.
When you say contempt for evidence, what do you mean?
By contempt for evidence, I mean exactly what we see in everything from foreign policy to discussions for a long time of global warming. Foreign policy, for example, the Iraq War was based on false evidence, which is that Saddam had something to do with 9/11 and that there were WMDs in Iraq. Now, it is possible that a reasonable person who didn't have access to intelligence reports might have believed that Saddam had WMDs, but now we know it wasn't true. And yet, huge numbers of Americans, more than half, still believe Saddam had something to do with 9/11. We're basing public policy not on evidence, but on emotion and passion. In fact, Obama just said that, and it's the first time I've heard somebody say that when we're making decisions about public policy, they need to be based on reason and evidence and not on passion.
So you're really making the case that there is more anti-intellectualism and anti-rationalism in America, more contempt for evidence, than in most other developed countries. And I guess the question, the obvious question is, why?
Well, I think there are three main factors. One of them is fundamentalism, which, while it's not a majority phenomenon at all, but 1/3 of Americans believe in the literal truth of sacred books. This doesn't exist in any other developed country in the world. It doesn't exist in the developed countries of Europe or in Asia. And fundamentalism, and I emphasize not religion, but fundamentalism, is at its core anti-rational, because you can be religious, all kinds of people are, and accept Darwin's theory of evolution, but you can't insist that the Earth was created in 6 days and accept Darwin's theory of evolution. So that's one thing, but that's always been with us. The second thing is the 24/7 infotainment culture. Now, that exists all over the world. The interesting question is, why have Americans proven more susceptible to it? And I think part of the reason is that we have always had this immense romance with technology. Over and over, I hear, you know, and I've lectured a good deal in the last month in various places, that computers are making us smarter. This is a part of the American romance with technology. No, they're not. Computers are just a tool. I love computers. I've been called a technophobe, but that's not true. But computers are only a tool. Finding information in computers is important only if you already have a body of knowledge that enables you to judge what's true and what's false. And just being able to swoop down like a vulture in a computer, as I'm sure you and I both do, and find how to spell the names of countries whose names we don't know how to spell, the order of dates in which we've forgotten, if there's not a body of knowledge behind that, computers aren't making us smarter. And in fact, a lot of the things we do on computers, which is basically look at the video culture, are not making us smarter at all. The more time we spend looking at things on screens, the less smart we become, in my view.
How much do you blame American schools in what you see as this rampant anti-intellectualism?
American education has serious failings, and I think that we need to talk less about college, which everybody is obsessed with, how to pay for college, and more about elementary and secondary education. And this is actually related, again, as Hofstadter said, to our best traditions. We're the only country in the developed world that has local and state control of school curricula. If you live, let's say, in Italy, there may be different cultural values in the Piedmont and in Sicily. But if you go to high school, you're taught the same things about science and about Italian history wherever you go. This is not true here. In areas of the Midwest and the South, where fundamentalism is strongest, the rural Midwest, the Fordham Foundation has found that only about 1/3 of American schools are doing a decent job of teaching evolution. The reason for that is that local school boards are able to intimidate teachers against using the very word evolution.
So even if there are science teachers who fully accept evolution, they might be too scared to actually teach it in their classroom.
A lot of them are worried. What they do is they substitute phrases like changes over time for evolution, which is very confusing to kids, but it's not science. It's also history. We don't have any national standards for the teaching of history. In other words, there's no agreement on what kids should be taught, a basis, you know, beyond which you obviously build what should be taught about American history. When there was an attempt to develop some national history standards about 15 years ago, the right wing got all up in arms because the first standards were really political correctness run mad. They wanted to change the phrase "we the people" in the Constitution to "we the peoples," as if that was what was written in the Constitution. And two great intellectuals, public intellectuals, Arthur Schlesinger Jr., who died and was, of course, very liberal, and Diane Ravitch, who is not dead, who is conservative but bipartisan enough to have served in both the Clinton and the administrations of George H.W. Bush. They endorsed a new set of national history standards, which added a lot more African-American history, women's history, but struck out some of these mad excesses of liberal political correctness. And they got nowhere. We need national curriculum standards, not imposed by the government, but at least presented. And one of the characteristics of intellectual life today is that right-wing and left-wing intellectuals, I would say right-center and left-center, not the real nuts at the extreme ends of the spectrum, it's very difficult for them to cooperate on things like curriculum standards, which logically they ought to be able to. Our public school system is a mess. Look, blaming it on fundamentalist religion is wrong. Two-thirds of Americans say evolution and creationism should be taught, but two-thirds of Americans don't know what DNA is. Now, you should not have to be an intellectual or a college graduate to know that DNA is the key to heredity. That's something everybody should come out of a high school biology class with, and it has nothing to do with fundamentalist religion and everything to do with the fact that our public schools are a mess.
I certainly can understand how teachers and even whole school districts feel like they have to walk on eggshells when it comes to, say, teaching evolution. On the other hand, when it's teaching history, when it's getting at the basic story of the founding of this country, the story of the founding fathers, the Civil War, later wars, I guess I just assume that most schools teach that stuff.
But if they do, they're not succeeding, since over half of 15-year-olds don't know that the Revolutionary War came before the Civil War. I mean, I think the failure to teach logical thinking is beneath all of this. But again, I've heard a lot of right-left dialogue, and the left often says, oh, you just want them to teach facts. No. This, again, the idea that there's an opposition between teaching logical thinking and facts is wrong. They go together. You need to teach people how to think, but they can't know how to think. For example, how to think properly about racial history of this country. You need to know that the Constitution was based on allowing slavery. You have to know that before you can know why the Civil War was fought. But if you don't know that the Constitution was written before the Civil War, it's all a muddle in your head. And what I'm saying, judging from all of these good polls, and these are good, statistically, randomly balanced polls, not junk science and junk thought, as I call it, people don't know these things, so that reasoning and facts go together. They're not in opposition. Just as, for example, in public life, the ability to speak well and to educate and inspire through the way you speak and evidence also go together. I think one of the classic disheartening things that happened in the last couple of months is the Clinton attack on Obama for, quote, talking too good and saying, well, that doesn't matter. You've got to have real solutions. That's straight out of an old anti-intellectual playbook. Why is there an opposition between speaking well and having real solutions? There isn't. There shouldn't be. If you can't educate people about your solutions, you're not going to get anywhere in public life either.
Susan Jacoby is the author of The Age of American Unreason. She spoke with Steve Paulson.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.